Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X mobile studio in the Valley of the Sun. It's time for Tech of the Town, your place for entrepreneurial stories and lessons from the Valley's most inspiring technology leaders.
Welcome to Tech of the Town here on Valley Business Radio X, where we engage with technology companies and innovation throughout the state of Arizona. I'm pleased to be joined in the studio today by Khaled Al-Maskari, founder and chief executive officer of HIMS, Health Information Management Systems. Welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. It's nice to be here.
And also here in the studio with us is Dr. Roland Segal, who is a psychiatrist, clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Arizona, and chief medical officer for HIMS and its Axiom platform. Welcome, Dr. Segal.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for having us.
This is an interesting topic because your company and your platform is entering a very complex set of issues and challenges, but also opportunities. Khaled, why don't you give us a brief introduction, first of all, to your company, to the Axiom platform, and give us an overview of how it works, how it serves folks.
Sure. So Axiom is an electronic health record platform that's browser-based. It's geared towards integrated healthcare, a lot of behavioral health providers and PCPs. Axiom is set up in a way that will help users use less of the software and focus more on the patients to provide more services, better services to patients.
So let's go into a real world scenario that most people can relate to. They're in a clinic or doctor's office or some sort of healthcare facility. They're seeking care for something. And now, as many people might know, the world has migrated through some growing pains to electronic health records. Maybe there's a physician's assistant or med tech who's there. There's a laptop. They're typing things. They might be talking to you back and forth. The providers need to add their notes and things after the visit or during the process. This is the scene that the Axiom platform is entering into, yes?
Exactly. So for the past few years, there was a mandate by federal government to have electronic health records in every office. Unfortunately, at the time, the adoption rate was very low. It needed to accelerate. But with that came a lot of problems. Right now, it's estimated about half of the time that doctors are in the outpatient clinic is focused on their EHR instead of focusing on the patient. So what we do as a platform is we're trying to reduce that amount of time. Currently, most of the services that are being provided have to be tracked electronically. In order for them to be tracked electronically, you have to use an EHR. The EHR is interrupting the process where patient and client could talk and communicate. And our goal is to focus less on the EHR and more on having providers focus on connecting with their patients.
We'll hear more about how that plays out in use, but I'm curious a little bit about your background and how you found this particular problem as something you wanted to tackle.
Sure. So when I graduated, I was lucky enough to work for a behavioral health organization. And at the time, I was serving as the MIS director, Management Information System director. A lot of my friends were clinicians who provided services to seriously mentally ill clients, general mental health and substance abuse. And over time, they've been talking about how difficult it is to manage what they have to manage on a daily basis and then go back and spend twice as much time entering data into the software. So we talked so much about the problems and the pain points. And I felt that I could do a better job at connecting clinicians to their patients by reducing the amount of time that they spend on the EHR. So it was a lot of trial and errors, focusing on talking to clinicians at all levels, doctors, nurses, office managers, case managers, and then understanding what is it that they do and how could we automate some of those processes. And then I fell in love with the industry as well. where I felt that there is so much that's being done, and then the resources that are there were not being supported in a way that needed to be supported. So over the past 5 years, we've been focusing on that one specific issue, is getting the patients that need the help to actually be seen by everybody and making them the focus of healthcare, rather than, unfortunately, sometimes the electronic health record is the focus of healthcare providers.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an important point, and we'll certainly explore that a little bit further. Dr. Roland Segal, you are a psychiatrist. You're involved in the delivery of care as well as in oversight and kind of industry developments. Integrated healthcare, meaning behavioral mental health and physical systems, body health, is becoming increasingly important. Certainly in Arizona, there are a number of initiatives that have made this at the center of things. Can you give us an overview of this landscape when it comes to the healthcare provider side of things, how behavioral mental health sits in the larger picture?
Of course. It's very important to integrate care. A lot of people who have psychiatric issues also may have medical problems. And there are times when a patient sees a psychiatrist and then a primary care physician, but the two entities don't communicate with one another because of lack of access to the records. So electronic medical records, such as Axiom, they allow the better communication between the two entities, primary care, psychiatry, maybe other subspecialties. But not only that, it also improves communications between different levels of care. So if a patient is hospitalized and then discharged into, let's say, intensive outpatient program or partial hospitalization program or residential program, and then after that they go into outpatient care where they see a psychiatrist, a therapist, maybe even a family therapist, all those entities need to communicate with one another so they have access to the same information. Therefore, nothing actually falls through their cracks, but also that they don't duplicate the services. So, for example, if you're ordering a laboratory that was just done a week ago, why duplicate that? That's an extra cost, and also putting a patient through something that they don't really need to have.
Now, you completed your medical degree from the University of Arizona College of Medicine, psychiatry residency at Banner Good Samaritan Medical Center, and then a forensic psychiatry fellowship at the University of Southern California. You're board certified in general adult and forensic psychology. That's an extended process. What I just described, your educational professional training covers a good decade or more. A lot has changed during that time. What are some of the new ways in which behavioral mental health are being considered now that are different from when you first entered medical school?
Right. So over the last 15 some years, I remember the process of carrying heavy paper-filled charts from floor to floor, from service to service, outpatient versus inpatient. And now, not only are electronic medical records available, but just like Khalid said, they're actually mandated. We have seen the growth pains, if you will, because over the years you could hear providers, both nurses, social workers, and psychiatrists and primary care physicians complaining, look, I did not go to medical school in order to sit in front of my computer for 6 hours and just documenting everything that I do. I want to interact more with people and cure people, help people. So Axiom actually allows us to spend less time in front of a computer documenting, because it can send reminders, it can auto-populate some of the data that you don't need to go and find because it is available to you at your fingertips. So those are some of the things that I've noticed over the years.
Are there unique aspects of behavioral health that make this kind of integrated care even more important for the delivery of the quality of services and that you have? Or is this a common problem no matter which domain of health service provision you're talking about?
Right. I think every specialty of medicine will have its own unique problems. In behavioral health, however, usually there are multiple players in the team. It's a multi-team approach to patient care. So you may have a psychiatrist, you may have a psychologist, you may have a psychotherapist. There may be some sort of family conflict where families—
Social workers, yes.
Exactly. You're completely right. And all of those entities need to communicate with one another and have access to the same information.
it's shocking to me how much lip service is paid to the idea of patient-centered care and how much of the institutions, the systems, the workflows, et cetera, are much more record-centered. So I'm struck as you were providing that overview that the common theme among providers is, look, I didn't go and get this training in order to be a data entry person. I really want to interact with people. We've created somehow this incredible bureaucratic debt as we try to responsibly manage the complexity of the information, the records, the histories, the interventions, et cetera, et cetera. It just creates an incredible burden here. Khalid, your specialty is in healthcare informatics, and that sounds like it should be very technical, but I'm intrigued by the fact that at the center of all this, you're talking about enabling human-to-human interactions. How do you see the technology itself playing an important role in getting out of the way so that providers and patients can get down to the business of what they're there in the same room to do?
Sure. So a big part of creating the EHRs was really to help the providers provide better services. But over time, it became the biggest burden. And as a matter of fact, a lot of providers are thinking about quitting their jobs because of the amount of time that it takes to do things that they were not trained to do. So what the core of the issue is the billing. Everything that needs to be written needs to be billed. The billing process has a lot of requirements. Some of them make a lot of sense because you have to track and manage what services are being provided. You have to prove that the service was clinically necessary, and then you have to go through that whole thing. The issue to me is most of that was put in the clinical side rather than it being an administrative function or something that an electronic health record would take care of. So right now, half of the time that doctors and clinical staff do is not with the patient. The problem is simple. If you think about it, it really is simple. Going back to where the interaction was 80%, 90% with the patient and then 10% writing the note. What we're solving is to be able to get that back by removing some of the functions that are unnecessary. One of the big issues with healthcare, there are a lot of regulations and then regulations on top of other regulations. And sometimes nobody stops and thinks, wait a second, do we need to have all of these things? Can we remove some of these areas that nobody has looked at in many years? A big issue for us looking at the data, because we have tens and hundreds of millions of records, is that nobody looks at that data once it's entered. So you enter the data, and then next you have another patient that you need to provide services to, and that cycle continues. What we're doing with Axiom Platform is starting to get that information to the people that need to see it at the time when it needs to be seen. So rather than spending a lot of time looking at stuff that doesn't make sense, we're saying these are the triggers, these are the areas where somebody would need to know that a prescription was ordered or that there was an issue with a lab or that an appointment was not met. And that's really the focus, is to provide the information when you need it and then remove a lot of the administrative to make it an automated service rather than having to spend a lot of clinical time doing things that you're not trained to do.
Let's talk then about some of the key features of the platform itself before we get to a very interesting line of inquiry, which is how do you encourage adoption of new into a world where legacy systems are the norm. But first, let's talk about the platform itself. There's some unique features, some customizability, some ways that a provider or a clinic or a facility can customize it and make it adaptable to their specific use cases. Can you walk us through some of those key aspects on the feature side and some of the benefits of those features?
Sure. So traditional EHRs are set up in a way that healthcare providers will have to change their workflow to meet the EHR needs. So it is you purchase an EHR and then you have to re-engineer the workflows, the processes, the system that worked for you just to make sure that you actually could use that EHR. And then another aspect is the cost for getting the update. So EHRs would be creating updates every 6 months, a year, but then there's a lot of cost associated with that. So some agencies are not able to afford the cost, and some of them do not have the resources to change the workflow. And that's where the issue comes. So what we try to do, the core thing to the Axiom platform is the customization and the configuration. We really believe that each agency, each provider, they have their own way of doing things. They have a workflow that works for them. We're not there to change it. We're there to enhance it, to augment it. So the software itself was created with the idea everything is customizable, configurable. We have the templates that you'll be able to get up and running in a really relatively very short time. But if you wanted to have different workflow for getting the patient going through vitals and providing the services than another agency, we have it set up that way. And it really is, the other thing is, it's very easy and simple. So you don't have to have a developer or a programmer to do that for you. A lot of traditional EHRs, you would have to hire programmers and coders to do it, which adds cost and complexity. It's not just the cost, it's the developer or programmer does not know what you need to get done. So we created tools to allow anybody in the agency to actually design the system the way that they wanted to do it. And then we also removed the cost aspect of it, where everything that is being provided, because there are a lot of other software that you don't have to pay every time you're using a spreadsheet or a Word document. If they add new features, you don't have to pay extra for that feature. It comes in as part of the subscription. So we're using that subscription model to say the Axiom is a subscription-based service. We provide the updates and the new releases without you having to determine whether that fits into your budget or not.
There's always a trade-off in software between customizability and stability. If you give people too many options, either it becomes overwhelming or they break the thing. So how do you navigate that flexibility while still providing a consistent user experience across different use cases?
Sure. So what we did is we spent a lot of time looking at the behavioral health and integrated health industry. We're lucky to have 80% of our staff have clinical background and behavioral background. We listen to our customers in terms of what are the things that they need to get done, and then we go back and synthesize that information, determine the best way to move forward with it, and then the shortest amount of time to get them that information. The software is very stable. The core part of it is really stable. The customization is set in a way that would guide you through those customizations. And then we do have triggers and methods to know if there is something that needs to be updated. But it comes back to the core of what we are doing, which is making sure that the platform that we have responds to the needs in behavioral healthcare, integrated healthcare. And also part of it is we have staff that are that participate in the discussion of the new regulations, the changes in healthcare. And as you know, there are so many changes and updates that happen, especially in behavioral healthcare. So part of it is being in the forefront of that, understanding what it means, and then looking at Axiom and making sure that it integrates well with it. And a lot of it is thinking for the clinical staff, because they don't have the time to also focus on the administrative part of it.
Absolutely. Dr. Segal, talk to us about the role of chief medical officer in a technology company like this one. What is the work? What's your contribution, and how do you engage with the technologists, the sales force, business development people, and kind of bring your deep specialist point of view into informing their discussions?
Sure. So I carry multiple hats. One of the hats that I have is Chief Medical Officer of Valley Hospital here in Phoenix. I'm also the managing partner for Scottsdale Mental Health and Wellness Institute. That's a clinic located in Scottsdale, and managing partner for Innovative Behavioral Health Solutions. So as part of the business, I am a clinician and I see patients day in and day out. So I'm able to bring that expertise into Axiom and say, this is what needs to change in order to better productivity, the experience of users, both nursing, physicians, and for patients' outcome. But also, as part of the Innovative Behavioral Health Solutions, what we do is we take over entities and we manage those entities, provide medical directorship. And part of that is bringing companies like Axiom into them in order to keep track of the productivity, of the no-show rates, of better outcomes, and experience that providers have with the electronic medical record. So over the past year that I have been consulting with Khalid and Axiom, we have made quite a few changes in order to improve the access to some of the information. For example, as I'm doing my note, it would be fantastic if we could have latest labs right next to that data, if we could have the medications that the patient is on right there. And those have been implemented. So now as I'm doing my note, I don't have to go to two or three different windows in order to access that information. The information is available there. So if I can reduce my time spent documenting by 10, 15, 20% over a period of a year, that will really improve my experience with the electronic medical record.
Right, and remove some of the friction and the time spent clicking through this window, that window. Exactly. Also, must reduce error as well, because even you find something on one screen, just to remember it, you know, for one click away. When you're doing a lot of things, like it can introduce human error into a very sophisticated system.
Right, Khalid and I always have those discussions. We need to reduce the real estate. This is taking too much real estate. I don't want to scroll up and down. I want to have it right then and there. And Axiom is very, very responsive in making those changes. Sometimes it's brain spinning how quickly they respond and make those changes.
And one thing that we do, speaking of behavioral health that is special and different, is the collaborative approach. So there are so many different staff that work with the team. The collaboration part of it, it's good in theory, but adding an EHR slows it a lot. So you have to go and do one thing at a time, and then you have to pass that information from one provider to another, which takes a lot of time. So what we're doing is looking at the collaboration. It is a team concept, but the software is also looking at it as a team concept as well. So one thing that we're doing is we're creating collaborative notes where you do not have to go and pen things, or you do not have to wait for somebody else to finish it. It's really, we're using technology that's available today, like Google Docs and like Microsoft Collaboration, and we're incorporating that into behavioral health EHRs. That way it's reducing the amount of time that people use it, plus it's the sharing of the information. You do not have to wait for somebody else, because everything is important. Like you mentioned, about 10% of deaths in the U.S. are because of misdiagnosing and because of human error, unfortunately. So the more accurate the information is, and the more it is available when you need it, the better it is for everybody.
Dr. Segal, can you share with us an example, obviously with the appropriate level of anonymity and generality and all those things, of where this works really well and why it matters so much to have this kind of EHR system in terms of the delivery of integrated health to patients? Like, what's the human stakes here? Can you give us an example or illustration of some kind to kind of add some color to this?
Sure. As part of the Innovative Behavioral Health Solutions, we are in charge of a rural Arizona entity. And that entity has an inpatient facility and also outpatient services. So when we took over that inpatient hospital, because it was taking so long to document, the facility, even though it had capacity of about 16 patients, wasn't able to have 16 patients in the hospital because productivity was just not there. So they could only treat 9-10 patients a day. Since we took over and we implemented Axiom, for example, we were able to reduce the amount of time spent documenting and increase the amount of time we could spend with patients actually treating and improving lives. So we were able to hospitalize 16 patients at a time. We also were able to reduce duration of stay. So we're able to help more people with less time. But also, because Axiom is so good between different levels of care, from outpatient to inpatient and from inpatient to outpatient, the outpatient doctors are able to access that information, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They already know what medications the patient is stable on, what labs have been done, so they don't have to duplicate the services.
Is there a degree to which the patients can also engage with the platform, or in some ways be empowered in terms of their own care on the communication side, on the decision-making side of things? How does the patient interaction with the platform take place, or does it?
It's a very, very good question. So for a long time, behavioral health especially, the patients were looking from the outside and not being part of the treatment for many different reasons. One of the things that we are doing is we have a patient portal that patients have access to the information the minute that it's entered, provided that the clinical team is approved that process. We're also using new technologies. The no-show rate for behavioral health appointments is really high, about 40%. We are using artificial intelligence and other technologies to help reduce that number. Some of the things that we're able to do are pretty simple. A text message at the right time, it has shown that it improves the show rate for patients. Looking at location of where the patient is and where the clinic, and providing other information for the clinical staff to help with that has really improved it. But what we're trying to do is make sure that the patient, who is the core of everything that happens, they have access to their information and they are participating in the decision making, understanding what needs to happen, and also feel like they have a voice.
That's so important, given that one of the unfortunate downsides of institutions is they create bureaucratic layers and roles. And a lot of times, in order to reach the compassionate and caring provider, the patient has to navigate through so much of the externally facing, the user experience, if you will, of simply trying to get to the building, deal with the receptionist. I mean, no, I don't mean to disparage anybody, but sometimes when you're put in a role where your primary function is simply navigating bureaucracy, you lose sight of the fact that you are the customer-facing part of this brand, that someone's core experience with the clinic is the somewhat grumpy sometimes, not everyone, obviously, person they have to interact with on the phone who speaks in acronyms, who's adopted the internal language of the practice as their external voice. I think we've all experienced this to some degree or another. I mean, I take my kids to a place and I've got to deal with the person. I'm like, I don't know what that means. You're going to have to speak human to me. Yeah. That's inside language. I don't know what a ha 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 is. I'm a doctor, but not a physician. I have a PhD and I don't understand what you're saying. So I don't know how this other person sitting next to me in the waiting room has a chance, right? You mentioned something important and interesting. Certainly, artificial intelligence, machine learning, deep learning, algorithmic types of things are capturing a lot of attention. But there's some very important roles that these technologies can play in reducing some of the inefficiencies. How does that play out in an EHR platform like Axiom? What is the role of the AI in helping empower the whole thing?
Sure. So behavioral health, or healthcare in general, lags when it comes to technology, and behavioral health actually lags behind healthcare in general. Many of the features and the new technologies that have been around for a while have not been applied into behavioral health, into electronic health record. So we've been focusing on artificial intelligence and how we could use that to reduce the burden that everybody in healthcare experiences on a daily basis, including patients. Some things that make a lot of sense, that a machine is much better and geared toward doing than a human, is the area of the no-show rate. So why not use that technology to improve that? High-risk patients, something that a technology would be able, something like AI would be able to determine patients that may be high risk and help reduce the ER visits, unnecessary and visits, by providing that information to healthcare providers and having them intervene and provide preventative services. There are many areas that AI could help, and we're really excited about the opportunity there for EHRs.
Let's dig into that just a little bit, because from an outside point of view, it's not immediately clear to me how that works. So you say one of the ways it can help is reducing the no-show rates. How does that happen? What's going on?
So right now, a typical patient would get a call or get the appointment, and then a month later, for a month ahead. And then at that time, nothing happens. So you're not sure if the patient will show up to their appointment. Plus, you don't have any history, because you're so busy looking at the day-to-day stuff. You don't know what the probability is of the patient actually coming to their appointment. And these are patients that need that rely on those services. Unfortunately, they're not able to necessarily make it unless there are some notifications, some alerts, a lot of stuff that could be done via texting, phone calling, even having the right time of the day. So one thing that we've experienced is that some patients do better in the morning versus the afternoon. Right now, that information is not available to a lot of healthcare providers. Right now, the appointment is based on the provider's availability, not the patient's most likelihood to actually show up to the appointment. So that's how we're shifting that discussion, is looking at the patient's best possible time for them to actually come to the appointment. And then we're also looking at it from what other tools that they need to make sure that they come there. So if they need a bus pass, for example, that's really important. We're showing that to them. Before, nobody would be able to actually look at tens of thousands of patients to decide what each patient does. The power of AI is that it allows you to do that without even you having to think about it.
You know, I get it now. It's very interesting. You know, when you talk about everything from scheduling, that was a great example, all the way through to the ancillary information, the kind of qualitative history related things. There's a lot of information available and no real way to use it without a platform that can find ways to incorporate that into surfacing relevancy and things. And that's just a different set of rules. I mean, as you said, the scheduling is based around the provider's schedule is just a set of rules. Yeah. Whether they're people-based ones or, you know, my actual calendar only shows X number of appointments, you know, things of that nature, this gives a much more interesting approach to that. What are some of the biggest challenges that we're seeing on two fronts? And we'll talk about them first in the business dimension, and then let's talk about the broader issue of behavioral and integrated health, but business-wise. You've got a great idea. You assemble a team. You build a product. Take us back, Khaled, if you will, to getting client number one and then how you got from that client to where you are today with a multi-state presence and so on. That's an interesting journey in and of itself. There's a lot of folks with a great idea, especially for healthcare-related tech, and it never sees the light of day because they haven't navigated that product market fit, the sales cycle, the relationship building, et cetera. So what can you share what you've learned through taking your company from concept through to execution that might be meaningful to other technology startups in med tech or in other industries?
I think a lot of ideas, a lot of people that have great ideas are focusing on the idea and focusing on how important that idea is than spending more time listening to the needs of the people that they're trying to help. So when we first started, there was a need for an electronic health record that would respond to behavioral health services. And we could have gone and created something that we thought was the best thing, but we spent so much time listening to so many people and then focusing on not just one role. So it wasn't the doctor. We talked to the office manager. We talked to the bus driver, different roles, people that make up behavioral health, and then understood what their pain points are. Although there are times when we had to look at the technology and understand that it's not ready yet to do that. Because if you solve the first biggest problem that they have, then people are more willing to invest in making sure that they use your service and your product. To me, it was making sure that the majority of the time, 80% of what we're doing, we're listening to what people need. We're listening to what the current issues, and then thinking about the possibilities of what we could do to help them. Looking at it from a global perspective, a broader perspective rather than one perspective, was really helpful. When we got our first customer, it was the right time for providing that service. What we did at that time is we tried to scale that by making sure that we understand what are the issues on a daily basis and what are the things that we could show that there's an improvement. So Dr. Segal talked about how if you show that there's an improvement from before you use the product to after, and you could point it to them and they see it and they know it, then the likelihood of them using it is a lot more important. The other thing that we wanted to do is really to make it look like a social media platform. People currently use EHRs because they need to use it. What we're doing is we want to have Axiom be the software that they want to use, not need to use. So some things that may not be important in behavioral health and integrated health, like the look and feel, having the ability to customize it the way you want to customize it. A lot of other companies, established companies, that are not looking at that, but you have to connect the person to the product that they need to do. And that was really important for me as an entrepreneur to understand it's not just the functionality, it's the feel. It's the connection that you have with the users. And over time, we've been lucky to have word of mouth be our biggest marketing tool, is the ability for other providers and doctors and nurses and case managers that have used our product and moved to other states or other companies to recommend it. But again, it comes back to doing a lot of listening and then looking at it from the broader perspective. What are you trying to solve? And then spending a lot of time getting something that may not be ready, like it may not be perfect, but you know that it'll be a lot better than what people are using today.
Dr. Segal, on that same point, in your many different roles, giving you insight into health providers throughout the state, obviously, medical directorship is one pathway to adoption because you can simply say, hey, this is best practice. We're going to use this platform, and you can kind of bake it in. But what does a company with a solid solution like HIMS with the Axiom platform need to do to really get in the world of the providers who are going to use it? Khaled spoke to the importance of that listening, but what are the key issues and concerns from the provider side that they need to take into account?
Sure. So starting at the very top, it's always a balance between fiscal responsibility for a company and providing the best possible care to the patients. Obviously, there are a lot of problems with behavioral health in general nowadays, including stigma, access to care, workforce shortages, and having an electronic medical record that can actually improve both best outcomes, best care, and fiscal responsibility for a company would be a winning solution for all parties. So when you have an electronic medical record that reduces the amount of time a physician or a nurse or a social worker needs to spend in front of that computer documenting, and being able to provide better care to that individual patient and maybe even see more patients in a day, that would improve both outcomes and fiscal responsibility. But also, a good electronic medical record will see how much data you're entering and how many services you're providing and choose the most appropriate billing codes. Because a lot of the times we're so busy documenting that we don't know what billing codes are appropriate and what not. So there are a lot of aspects that artificial intelligence and appropriate electronic medical record like Axiom can solve for an entity.
So that's an interesting point, that there's both the efficiency and experience of doing the work and the fiscal responsibility married together.
Exactly.
In a platform. So if you're entering a note, for example, and the platform is surfacing appropriate codes in whatever way that it does, I'm just visualizing,
right,
this here, fantasizing literally is all I'm doing. It not only increases or decreases the amount of time you have to spend on this, but also increases the likelihood that you're going to get paid for those services, because the elephant in the room here is, of course, insurance and access and other, you know, other kind of on the billing side, like the practice has to get remunerated for the services they provide. And that happens in a variety of different ways. Tying those records to billing codes is, you know, necessary evil, I guess, at some level, because it's how the money flows.
That's
and makes
true.
The whole things makes the whole thing work. I'm struck by how, so we talk about integrated care as being so important. I think we can all nod our heads and agree. I'm struck by how disintegrated the system as a whole is, where the providers, the insurance companies, the legislators, the patients, ever all occupying different worlds, engaged in different things. And of course, each of those categories breaks down into so many subgroups. It's really quite an interesting challenge. Who are the primary people you engage with as you're trying to evangelize this technology, you know, increase your client base and rate of adoption? Like, who are the key players that you, for example, if you're approaching a new system or you know, provider network or whatever, who are you engaging with?
Sure. So speaking of claims and billing, one of the areas that we actually, just to show you how sometimes just because everybody does something that everybody continues to do it, is that you have coders that basically look at the notes and decide what service code it needs to be. So that adds a lot more time, cost, plus you're not sure if that's the best way to go about it. So what we did is we used algorithms to determine what services should be based on the information that's in the note. It's something that's available to everyone, but it really is difficult to change the minds of some of the people that have been doing this for a very long time. So technology is there to help us, and we really decide whether we want to use it or not. But that's something that was extremely important in making sure that you get faster access to billing and you get a better return in terms of adjudication rates.
Yeah. Before we get back to my original question, I appreciate you brought that up, and I'm struck by the parallel with human resources and the way in which artificial intelligence is entering and disrupting a lot of the practices around HR. Because anytime you have something that has policies and rules, an algorithm can do that much faster, much more effectively, with much less bias than a human being. And there are people who are doing it this way because we always did it this way, who feel threatened by the appearance of this thing, you know, creating a whole little swirl of emotion and affect around the role of technology. But the reality is, if your primary job is sitting there and matching a number to a set of words, the algorithms are going to replace you and do a better job. Get used to it.
Exactly.
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
Maybe bad for you personally. Sorry, but it's a good thing for everyone.
Right. And what's exciting about it is that it speeds up the amount of time it takes to get everything done. As far as the people that we work with, we really look at everybody. So our discussion usually with keep an eye on all the health insurance changes that are happening. There are a lot of influencers in healthcare. Health information exchanges, and these are entities that are created to exchange healthcare information, making sure that we are part of that. And we also talk to providers and customers and patients. Our focus is understanding each state as we've expanded. Each state has majority of it is the same, but there are certain things that are a little bit different. So, for example, in one state, residential services may not be reimbursable services yet, where others, they've been reimbursable for many years. So what we do, we come in and provide the expertise, not just from a technology platform, but the experience we have. We do have 80% of our employees have healthcare experience in integrated healthcare. So we look at it from perspective of who are the people that we need to talk to, what are some of the regulations that are different from state to state or even from agency to agency, and then how could we provide a better service where we may be able to streamline some of those workflows and some of those things that have been done forever just because they've been done forever.
Is integrated care becoming the new normal, or is it still kind of an emergent phenomenon?
I think we're somewhere in the middle with that. I think some entities are much further ahead with that game than others. In some circumstances, integrative care is the best solutions. In some circumstances, it may not be. But there are a lot of positive outcomes with integrative care.
The word disruptive is often thrown around casually and hyperbolically when it comes to new technologies and established industries. But it does seem to me that with regard to healthcare, health insurance, health and wellness outcomes, there's a lot of heavy established institutional regulatory legislative realities that have to be navigated. It would seem as though a good idea executed well ought to be able to change things quickly. But as we have seen, debates that have gone on for decades now around health insurance reform, which is, most people don't realize, also has very little, if anything, to do with health care reform, cost and other kinds of things. There's just so much complexity to this. And the traditional media often focuses on the scandalous stories, the political posturing, the my team versus your team kind of party politics and nonsense. And for a technology company passionate about these issues, devoted to improving outcomes, quality of care, the human-to-human side of all of this. What I'm curious about as we begin to wrap up this conversation is, what are you inspired by and excited about? In other words, there's a lot of doom and gloom in the normal news, but as you look forward, what's coming that you think is important, or what should we be paying attention to?
Sure. With the healthcare industry and the behavioral health and integrated health care specifically, the pendulum swings every few years from one end to the other. And when I first started, it was really difficult for me to accept that, because it was more, there was logic that we wanted to make sure that things make sense. Unfortunately, with a lot of the complexity, healthcare industry is about $4.5 trillion every year in terms of expense. It is not easy to make huge shifts and changes. So once you understand that, the picture becomes very clear, at least for me, that our goal is to make it easier for the healthcare providers, regardless of the role that they play, in connecting with the patients as efficiently as possible, as fast as possible. And the role that gets me excited is, how could we marry technology with the services that are being provided today, and how to be an advocate for these technologies to be used. So our goal is to connect patients and doctors. Our goal is really literally to remove the EHR. So our goal is to remove ourselves from the equation. For a very long time, EHRs have been the center of every interaction. It shouldn't be that way. Patients don't go see a doctor to look at a computer. Patients need to be talking to a doctor to help them specific things that they need help with. So what excites me is, how do we get machine learning, artificial intelligence, smarter electronic health records? How do we get providers to actually not have sift through millions and millions of records? How do we provide it in a way that makes sense? Could we automate a lot of the things that should have been automated? Is there a way to not have the shortage? It's expected that in the next 6 years, about 90,000 doctors, there will be a shortage of 90,000 doctors. How could we augment that with the providers? How do we make it exciting for healthcare providers to actually come in and provide services? How do we make sure that patients are getting what they need? That's really what excites me, is the power of technology when applied correctly and then promoted in a way that makes sense to reduce all the complexities that healthcare has today.
Dr. Segal, what are your thoughts on this? What's important and interesting? What are you inspired by as you look to the future?
I think this is a very intriguing age we're in. I agree there's a shortage of providers, and I think electronic medical records are here to stay. I personally see electronic medical records as a big positive. We use a lot of technology in my clinic. We use telepsychiatry. We need AMR that can integrate with telepsychiatry. We should be able to access those medical records anywhere we are. If I'm providing care to rural America, and I am in Scottsdale, but the patient is 200-400 miles away, I should be able to access that record when I need it, when the patient needs me to access that record. I agree with artificial intelligence. There are so many things that we do, so many man hours that we spend, that can easily be replaced by algorithms. Khalid and I were talking earlier about some of the ideas that he has for his AMR, and I think those are beautiful things that are going to help us quite a bit to reduce that time that we spend actually documenting. Artificial intelligence can make sure that those human errors that Khalid was referring to earlier are prevented. When we're prescribing medications, there is no reason why an EHR can't tell me, hold on, there is an interaction there. Maybe you don't need to do that. Also, we have to make sure that there is no misappropriation of medications. So now we have electronic prescribing through EHRs. So prescriptions are going straight to pharmacists. And if there is an interaction on the pharmacy end, they can actually send us a message through the EHR saying, look, there's a possible interaction. Did you mean to do this? Or have you known that this patient just got a refill on this medication from this other doctor? Maybe you don't want to do this. So there are a lot of things that EHRs can make better. And I think that's where we are.
One thing that I'm particularly fascinated by, I'd love to get your thoughts on, is the coming dominance of voice-driven interactions with technology. We have been relying for years on keyboards and then touch screens, but our primary instrument for interacting with the world is our voice. The numbers are staggering in terms of the adoption of voice for search. Upwards of 30% of all searches on Google are now being done through voice interactions. The proliferation, although very early, of smart speakers and smart devices, clearly going to change the game insofar as we don't have to touch and type or even read on a screen in order to interact with our technology. Is this something that you're paying attention to, Khaled? Is it something that you have thoughts about? It's a huge topic. Obviously, we're at the end of our show, but what's going to be the coming role of voice interfaces and tech in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that, as you mentioned, is happening more and more often. And in the case of the healthcare industry, unfortunately, the laws and rules have not adapted to the new way of the technology. So a lot of times you're not able to use voice recognition because of the current rules that are there. But we are really excited about it. We are actually using some of the natural language processing in Axiom to help speed up the process. And it is important to make sure that the keyboard is not relied on as heavily. The technology exists. We are working on it. But what we need is for the rules to change to allow for that type of technology to actually exist in the exam room.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, for decades, medical, like literally probably 60 decades, medical transcription has been one way of turning a provider's voice into a record. Of course, the machine learning and natural language processing has gotten so good that, you know, we might be approaching a tipping point there where there's a whole other kind of ancillary service that gets eliminated because it's unnecessary. Anyway, we shall see. Khaled El-Maskari, founder and chief executive officer of Health Information Management Systems, a company that brings you the Axiom platform. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today. And also Dr. Roland Segal, chief medical officer for Axiom and many other hats that you wear. Thank you for the important work that you do in providing high quality mental and behavioral health services to folks throughout the state of Arizona.
Thank you for having us.
As always, I'm excited by the future. I could carry on these conversations till the evening, but it's time for us to say goodbye and good luck. And thank you all very much for listening. For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Tech of the Town.